Hi, welcome to When Songs Mean Business. I'm your host, Steph Belcher. Today's episode is a rebroadcast of our Level Up Your Business workshop from yesterday, Monday, January 24th. I want to take a second before we get into that to highlight the intention of this podcast in general. As a tax preparer, I have a lot of really personal and intimate conversations with people. And I found that many of my musician clients had really interesting stories, but they weren't often given a platform to share these stories. So this podcast exists as a way for musicians, songwriters, producers, and industry reps to share their opinions and their own personal stories. The purpose of this podcast is to be curious, to ask questions about people's lives and dive deeper into the real life situations that musicians encounter, both in and out of music. This isn't a how-to podcast. This is a why do I podcast. And that means that every guest is going to have a different journey and a different perspective. As you listen, you might resonate with some people more than others. That's the whole point. I want to help you find your people. So today's episode features our workshop guests from yesterday. You'll hear each of them introducing themselves, and you'll find their contact info down in the show notes. We'll discuss what's been working for us during the last 6 to 12 months, and as we launch deeper into the week-long workshop, we'll start to close some of the gaps in what we want, what we need, and what we're being offered by the market. You can join this workshop by signing up at stuffbelcher.com/levelup. Also in the show notes, it'll be going on all week. I would love to hear from you. Please register and I will message you the Zoom room. So without further ado, let's dive into When Songs Mean Business. All right. It is so wonderful to see you all. Thank you all so much for coming. I hope that this is going to be a wonderful experience for you all. I'm going to try to let you guys do most of the talking today. I'm hoping not to do all of the talking. So let's get started. I think there's enough people here to get started. If you have ever taken one of my workshops before and you know what's coming next, raise your hand. Yeah, that's it. It's time to dance, friends. We are dancing. So I have had this song in my head all day. It is so dreary and cloudy here. And I feel like I haven't seen the sun in like 10 weeks. Can you guys hear that? Oh yeah. All right. I can't be the only one dancing. Okay. All right, y'all. Who's pumped up? Give me a show of hands. Clap your hands. Make some noise. Are you guys excited? I know it's like the coldest January in the world. We're all trapped inside of a snowstorm and I'm over here like, everybody be happy. But that is just who I am. If we haven't met yet, I'm Steph Belcher. I have a lot of energy, a lot of optimism. I've been working in the music business now for about 24 years. And in that time, I have seen a lot of different waves of the music business come and go. When I first started working in music, CDs were the predominant way to get your music out there. And if you weren't getting played on radio, no one was hearing about you at all. You know, I was one of the people who was downloading MP3s over dial-up internet back in my parents' house. And then, you know, moved through the Napster phase. I worked for a tech company that promoted unsigned artists in 2006. And I've worked for a bunch of venues, done a bunch of event marketing. And now here we are in one of the toughest times that the music business has ever faced. Does everybody agree with me when I say that? Raise your hand if you think this is one of the toughest times you've been through in a while. No? No, I see a couple of no's. We're gonna come back to you. I want to know what your secrets are. So let's keep chatting about that. Thank you all so much for coming. So just to remind everybody, I'm going to be hosting this all week and I wanted today to really focus on networking. I wanted to just do it right from the start. Like, let's just have everybody meet each other right from the start
And I'm not going to do a whole lot of like heavy curriculum teaching. If you heard me say it on the podcast, I had originally started promoting this as like a business boot camp. I was going to be your drill sergeant. I was going to come in and be like, these are all the things you need to do before tax time. And then everything started getting shut down again. I planned that in like October. And everything started getting shut down again. And I was like, oh my God. And it felt so heavy on me to come into a workshop like this and tell you about all the things you need to do. And I was just like, gross. You know, I felt so out of alignment with that message. I sat with it and I meditated on it. And I was like, you know what? We need to just reconnect. I'm really hoping to be able to share our stories and what's working for us and what hasn't been working for us and what our struggles are. So I would love to kind of go around and introduce ourselves real quick. If you're comfortable with that, you can leave your camera on. If you want to be skipped, you can leave your turn your camera off. So I have Danielle first.
I'm Danielle Kuntz. I'm a new music harpist, which basically means I play new music that is newly composed, not music by people who are dead. I also do a lot of work just to encourage classical musicians to be open to contemporary music. I'm also part of the new music ensemble, The Blank Experiment, with Ava. She'll probably talk about it too, but we're both here to learn a little bit more about and working individually and then working as an ensemble.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Next, I see Lori. A longtime friend of my. Hi, Lori. How are you?
Hey, Stephanie. How are you doing? Good to see you. Good to see everybody else on here. I've recognized a lot of the faces. But my name is Lori Stratton. I'm based out of Whitmore Lake, and I published a local music blog called the Stratton Setlist. So I featured a lot of different artists like Mark Jewett, like Maggie, other people over the years. So it's nice to see all of you. And I also freelance for some other local publication music-wise, and I work with Grove Studios as their communications coordinator. So nice to meet all of you.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us. Lori is a fantastic writer. She helped me with my original bio, which I still, that was so many years ago. And I still go back to that one all the time because it's so well-written. So thank you. Charlie is next on my screen.
Hey, everybody. My name is Charlie May. I'm a guitarist and singer. I'm currently playing with a cover band called Serious Jack. Love it. Playing a bunch of different corporate gigs and just getting more experience playing. But looking to create an original band doing more like classic rock, psychedelic rock stuff, and really wanted to kind of pick y'all's brains about how to get into that completely different side of the music industry. So I'm really stoked to be here with y'all today.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us. Ava, I have next on my screen.
Hi, I'm Ava. I'm currently finishing my master's at DePaul, master's in performance. And I'm in the Blank Experiment with Danielle, and I'll be taking over the treasurer role. So I need to know all I know or all I can know about running that.
Cool. Thank you so much.
I'm Kate. I go by, my performance name is Sarah Maya. I'm actually based out of the Bay Area, California, but I grew up in the Upper Peninsula. So I'm happy to be connected with everybody. And I moved out here just before the pandemic with high hopes of connecting to the music community out here. And that's been, you know, hasn't really happened, but luckily I live in a home of a few other professional musicians. I am a vocalist and producer. I do mostly R&B and Latin jazz music, and am working on my first EP release for this year. And so wanting to learn some different ways of creating stable income in such an uncertain economy, whether it's through streaming or through membership, like creating a Patreon, or any other ideas that any of you have tried out. I would love to just hear and network with all of you and learn.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us. Next, I have Deja.
Hello, everyone. I'm Deja. What can I say? I'm currently a freelance digital content creator and video editor and actress. I recently graduated with my Bachelor of Arts degree in Music Industry Studies from Metropolitan State University of Denver. And I'm currently in the works of pursuing my master's degree from University of Southern California School of Dramatic Arts, pursuing acting. So that's kind of where I am right now and seeing where life is going to take me after, you know, recently graduating. So yeah.
Congratulations on graduating. I'm so proud of you. So next we have Maggie. It is what, first thing in the morning in New Zealand?
Yeah. That's nice. What I was going to say. Hi, I'm Maggie. I'm from Sterling Heights, but I live and work from New Zealand at present. I identify as a musician, composer, performer, activist, educator, amateur philosopher. I research trauma-informed music practices, and I blog about music and intersectionality, and I perform as the San Detroit Band, the Maggie Coco Band, and Science for Sociopaths, and I work with Girls Rock Detroit as their digital programming director.
Thank you. Thank you for coming. Thanks for joining us from the other side of the world. I think that's super cool. We miss you here, but I don't blame you for staying in the land of the Kiwis. All right. I see Shane next. Shane, hi. I think this is the first time we're seeing each other face to face.
Hey guys, my name is Shane. I am an artist manager. I run a music tech startup building essentially a video game style application that's going to allow artists to build their careers from the ground up. We call it autonomous music management. So everything that an artist needs to do laid out in a level format where they earn points for actions completed, such as like posting to Instagram, little things along the way. And we have a bunch of different integrations for monetization efforts, audience building, and it just kind of gives you that dopamine button kind of coming back. The lights and casino gambling tricks go off. We're getting ready to launch an artist program where we're basically going to crash course like 10 to 12 artists through this program. We just onboarded 6 interns. And I'm also the Digilog, which is a global music and tech community focused on artist educational resources, career resources. They just posted 4 remote jobs at different gigs today. So that's called the Digilog, where they're Detroit rep. We're going to be bringing them out, and they do a ton of different cool stuff. Definitely check that out.
Thank you, Shane. I highly recommend you guys keep an eye on this guy and keep an eye on what he's doing there, because that app, I've heard some stuff about that app and it is cool. All right. I have Mark next.
Oh, hi, Steph.
Hi, Mark.
I'm a bit of an anomaly in the songwriting and performance business because I started very late compared to the average. I wrote my first song at 52 years old. And now I feel like I'm Mark Jewett 3.0. In my earliest life, I was a musician and I drifted into corporate life for a long time and just really couldn't make a break for family reasons. And I retired from my corporate gig last November, and I want to take advantage of every opportunity I can. I also want to continue work, even if it comes to the point where I'm not up to performing anymore. I want to learn how the business operates so I can help younger aspiring writers and performers to navigate through this. So every process I take on, every tool I learn about becomes part of a toolkit to allow me to take us as far as possible.
Awesome. Thank you. I think that's awesome that you wrote your first song when you were 52. Like I'm 39 and I think I'm too late, but maybe I'm not.
No, I occasionally meet people similar to myself. Maybe 1 out of 300 or 400, but they're out there.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for introducing yourself. Nate Durow, if you are ready, you're next on my screen, or I can skip you. I can come back to you.
Of course, I put the biggest bite of my lunch into my mouth, right?
I was like,
right
on time. Nate's eating, so I'm going to call on him.
It's all good. I'm Nate. I'm a longtime talent buyer in Michigan. I currently am the lead talent buyer for Audio Tree Presents, and we would present 200 to 300 shows a year in Michigan, Detroit, Ann Arbor, Grand Rapids, Kalamazoo, all over the place. Right now, we mostly cancel and reschedule shows all over the state of Michigan. I also worked at Dime with Stephanie for one semester. And Deja, what's up? It's good to see you. Deja was in my class. And yeah, just generally very involved with live music and then also with the Audio Tree brand and all the video stuff we do based in Chicago. So it's good to see y'all. And definitely a couple of familiar names who I've never seen the faces before, Lori, Shane, et cetera. So it's good to see y'all.
Yeah, that exactly right there was like my whole point. Like, we're good now because Nate and Shane and Lori met each other. No, I'm just kidding. But that, it's not a big industry. It's not a big state. We've all seen each other's names a million times. And I'm hoping to start to foster some new conversations because, you know, when I sat down and I was like, why do I want to do this besides just talking to my friends? I want to help you all advance your careers. And the only way that you can do that is by knowing other people who are going to walk you on the path that they're on, right? So Nate is one of those people who is walking a cool path and knows a lot of people and a lot of venues. And so thank you so much for coming, Nate. You're awesome. I have Isaac on my screen. So hi, Isaac. Good to see ya.
What's going on? Hey, so first and foremost, I'm just a gig hustling musician. And this is what I do solely for my income, 100% for about 9 years now. That's all I've done is just play gigs, fill the calendar. You know what I mean? It's not that hard. First and foremost, I'm an original artist. I do produce a lot of music. I do R&B, fusion, jazz, rock, funk. I'm in the jam band world, but since I came towards the east side of the state, I gravitated more into what I was becoming, which was more into the R&B and fusion jazz world. I do a lot of original gigs, but most of what I do is like a solo acoustic gig, or I do a one-man band live looping show. And then I work for the Blue Water Kings, who is a part of the International Musicians League. And I do about 50, 60 weddings a year with them. I do my own corporate and private events. I'm my own party band. I'm kind of like in that space where I've learned how to not oversaturate myself in the public performing industry. And I put out a handful of good releases, my, you know, original stuff. And I do value myself as a production artist and studio artist, but tapping into the online presence, because I haven't really needed it that much. I've just like been out on the field at the gigs, but tapping into the online market, the social media platforms, all of that stuff, like trying to grow an organic audience. I'm just studying and learning and trying to find ways to do that, trying to figure out all that side of it too.
Yeah. Cool. Awesome. I can't wait to hear more about what's worked for you and what kinds of ideas that you've had. I think Nate is next.
Hi. Nice to meet you, Steph. I sent you an email a few months ago, just kind of inquiring. I'm friends with Allison and Sean Hoots from New York.
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much. Oh,
I live here in Brooklyn, New York. I'm a pianist, an artist, and instructor. And the pandemic has, I've been on pretty much every spectrum of the pandemic chaos in terms of freaking out at the beginning when everything initially got locked down in 2020 to just being over it and not caring because I have no more cares to give. And it's been... It's been a ride. I think the main thing that's been kind of sticking in my head recently is I think it was Nina Simone who said that the most important part of an artist is to reflect the times. So I'm trying to bottle that right now. As far as music performance, I've always been kind of a jazz guy until about 2018-19, when I started to kind of go through a monumental shift in finding my own voice and my own performance. I released my first project earlier in 2021, in September of 2021. And then, I've been teaching a lot since lockdown. I have a really ridiculous number of core students here in New York City that I teach, but that has extended all the way across the country. I have students in Montana, in California, I have 6 students in this little ski town called Truckee out in California. And so I've been kind of working. I'm from California originally, so I've been kind of navigating this whole world of teaching. And with Allison's help, I started my business finally and got all of the paperwork. And so now I have an LLC and I feel so grown up and, it's funny. I stumbled on this link here to today's Zoom meeting because I was tired of looking for a bank of where I was going to open my business account. It was overwhelming. So I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. So I stopped and I saw the link and I was like, great, let's take a break and meet some new people.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I can help you with the banking stuff too. We'll talk later. Sweet. Cool. It's great to meet you. Thank you so much for sharing your story. I love jazz and the piano, as you can see back there. So lots of things in common there. It's very cool. I think you would probably play well with a bunch of people in here, Sarah Maya especially. Awesome. Thank you so much for introducing yourself. Next on my list, I have Chesney.
I'm Chesney. I moved to Detroit in 2019 from California. And ever since then, I went to a school called Dime with Stephanie, who's actually one of my teachers there, and kind of introduced me to the whole world of what the music business is and how many different things you can do within the music business. So I got a degree. I just graduated last month with a degree in music industry studies, and I'm the lead singer of a band called Auto. So I've been just like managing that band, writing songs, releasing them, trying to get everything out there, and trying to take it kind of from like what was a quarantine hobby to something that's like more of a business, like getting an LLC and, you know, figuring out how to do everything kind of like professionally, and so that we can make taxes easier and kind of just keep everything, you know, separate. And yeah, that's kind of what I've been working on recently, is just trying to get all the, you know, take the hobby to like something real, a real business, and just get
level up.
Level up, exactly. Yeah. And just work shows and do, you know, whatever I can to participate in and support the Detroit music scene. So yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us. Chesney is a rock star, just so you all know. So definitely give her and her band a follow.
Yeah.
So next I have Abigail and Chloe, and they're both cameras off, muted. So if either of you want to introduce yourselves, feel free to. Hi, Abigail.
Hi. Yeah, okay. I couldn't get my camera to work, so I'm here. I'm not avoiding anything. Nice to meet you virtually, Steph and everybody. I feel kind of overwhelmed because you're all educated and experienced, and I'm very much not. I'm self-taught. I'm in my fourth year, boots on the ground, gigging, like Isaac was talking about, you know, hauling your gear in, trying to make as much money as I can every year. Single mom. I'm actually from, you probably have heard of Toledo, Ohio, but that's probably the closest big city you guys have heard of in Ohio.
Well, we're all pretty close to you. I mean, we're probably 45 minutes north from you.
I come up into your guys' territory all the time in the summer. Nice. Sorry, not sorry.
It's okay.
I do mostly an acoustic solo show, specializing in my own arrangements of music from like the 50s to the 80s. You know, stuff like My Girl, things everybody would recognize. When the pandemic hit, because again, like I said, I just started to take off, just started to have a presence in my area. And then the pandemic hit, did some live streaming consistently during the pandemic when everything was shut down. As soon as stuff opened up, I was taking every gig I could get. I'm running into the market saturation that Isaac talked about earlier, where there are a lot of places to play, especially in this area, but a lot of them don't pay well at all. I don't consider $150 gross to be anything at all. Obviously there are times where I have to take what I can get when it's slow, like in the wintertime. But so I'm at this point where I'm well known in my area, and I don't take some of this smaller is an inaccurate term, but I'm going to use it, the smaller gigs. And I'm looking for a way to climb the ladder, if that makes sense. Like, I'm 39. I started out late. Most of the people I know started right out of high school. I don't really have any connections in the area. It's a very clicky, I don't know about Michigan, but the Toledo area is very clicky. So if you're not friends with people, there's no help down here. So I'm interested to absorb every bit of knowledge every one of you has to offer here today and through the week.
Awesome. Well, thank you for joining us. You can just be our friend now. Don't worry about Toledo. You're a Michigan girl now. I'm actually originally from the Cleveland area. And I joke that they kicked me out because I was, that Ohio kicked me out because I was a Michigan hockey fan when I was growing up. And so I would wear like my Michigan starter jacket, and everyone's like, ow, what are you wearing? So it was just kind of natural for me to end up, you know, living 20 minutes from Ann Arbor, but yeah.
I'll be a Michigan girl any day. Your guys' state is way more beautiful than Ohio.
That's true. So thank you so much for joining us. It's just always so nice to meet new people. And the last person to introduce herself would be Chloe. Chloe, do you want to pop on? Or are you working? Oh, there we go.
I'm here. I am working. That's why my camera's off, because you guys don't need to look at my focused face the whole time. I'm Chloe. I live in Las Vegas. I am a business manager. I'm not a musician. I met Steph through a Facebook group, and we've kind of connected with our undying love for financials and profit and loss reports and all the good things with the finances. Spreadsheets. And spreadsheets. And I own Pink Noise Management. I was actually just on Steph's podcast. If you've listened to the more recent episode, I was on that one as well. I do business management for musicians, music business companies. I've recognized some of your names that I've come across, even like other businesses. Like, I'm just processing 1099s right now, and I've actually seen some of your names in my 1099s. So I work with a lot of various companies out of like everywhere, like Anovo Management out of Nashville. That's where I saw your name. I saw you thumbs up.
Sam's a really good friend. He's awesome. Yeah. Like, definitely. I love Sam.
Oh, this is exactly what I wanted.
Yeah. So I'm Anovo's business manager. I work with Stanton Moore. He's in Galactic. And I heard some of you mention like jazz funk bands and stuff. So I wasn't sure if you guys knew who he was.
Yeah, he's a legend.
But yeah, I work with people all over the place. I included my link if you guys want to check me out and stuff, but I'm not a musician. I just came here to hang. I'm working. I thought I'd have this going in the background and see everybody's faces and say hello.
Yay.
Yeah.
Yay. Thank you. So Chloe is my go-to recommendation for people who ask me to do bookkeeping and they're too big for me. I'm not really doing bookkeeping at this point because I have the baby home with me pretty much every day. He's at daycare today. I've lined up daycare for most of this week, but I send them all to Chloe. So if anybody needs bookkeeping, I'm probably going to send you to Chloe. So go ahead and just give her a follow now. Awesome. You guys are amazing. Thank you so much for taking all that time to introduce yourselves. That was kind of like my main point for today. I didn't really have a curriculum planned. The biggest thing that I want to walk away with today, besides having a collection of new friends, is I want to start to talk about things that have been working for us during the pandemic. It's easy to focus on the negative and sit here and talk about how hard everything's been and the cancellations and, the grief. I think there's a huge amount of collective grief sitting on top of us as empathetic people, musicians, people who are getting up on stage and making ourselves vulnerable every day. And we're really feeling that societal kind of effect on, one of the things I said that I was going to do is I was going to be like, type a one in the chat if you agree with me. But I don't actually want to clutter up the chat because I want to just copy and paste it into the Facebook group. But raise your hand if you feel like you're living in a time of grief right now. If you feel like you are losing things or mourning anything. Okay, so about half, a little bit more than half. Kind of, I think everybody popped their hand up at least at one point.
Raise your hand if you cried on a Zoom today.
I haven't cried.
Not this Zoom, but
today.
Right on a Zoom, but I was the only one there, and that was why.
Oh, that's hard. I was like worried today. I was like, is anybody going to show up? But then we had a snowstorm. So I was like, yeah, that's in my favor. Crying. There's been some crying. But, okay. So that's enough of the negative stuff, right? What's been working for you? If you have a story of like, this has really been working for me, I would love to hear it, whether it's Twitch or whatever. All right, Shane, I see you unmuted.
I have 12 minutes until my next community session I have to get into.
Okay, so don't use them all. Sum it up in like three.
Yep, I heard Isaac say a couple of things too. Really quick, just to give Isaac this, there are three keys, I believe, to building out that organic audience, really getting engaged, active, digitally to be able to progress your efforts. Number one is cohesion. So making sure that your artist name, your at, you know, your handle is discoverable. It's the same on everything. So it shouldn't vary if I'm going from Spotify to Instagram to Twitter to TikTok. It shouldn't be four different names, which is something you see way too often. Number two is consistency. You just really have to like show up, especially on the hard days when it's the hardest to show up. It's probably when it's most important. And number three is just connection, finding the core themes that you believe in to be able to connect your audience to those core themes and just making them a central part of everything that you do. But yeah, Steph, you mentioned something about, you know, having success in this time or like during this pandemic. And I guess I've watched Nate, you know, from a distance, like the struggles they've been going through as a live events company. And it's crazy because right before the pandemic started, I actually applied for a job with Audio Tree Presents. And I was definitely persistent about trying to get it. It didn't work out at the time. And little did we know, less than a, you know, a month later, 6 weeks later, we'd be in a pandemic and all events would be shut down. For me personally, like after like 3 to 4 weeks, I saw that in the pandemic, this was kind of a once in a lifetime opportunity. I put a whiteboard up on my wall and I just started building what I wanted to build. I was very intentional about the way I went about everything. You know, I took my time. I was very consistent, just very active. And now, over the last 3 months, I've had four different major labels try to recruit me as an A&R. I've had, you know, I'm working on some really big projects. I've earned a lot of, built a lot of quality relationships with people that I never could have prior to the pandemic. And it was just about taking that time to find my core audience, my community online, and just really being very intentional about the whole process.
Cool. So what's your daily process for that?
I start with my goals. I always write things out and I'm not a morning person at all. So like I normally don't open my schedule or get on socials until 11 or 12, 11 a.m. noon. And from there, it's just, I mean, we're very supportive of anything we see people that are in our core network doing. I try to retweet opportunities. Twitter is really a really big key. Twitter is a great place to be able to build connections, build relationships. It's a think space. People are interacting. They're sharing ideas. They're sharing advice, where most of the other social media platforms are content spaces. That's harder to have a conversation, a back and forth in comparison to Twitter. So I think Twitter's super key. So I usually just get on Twitter. I'll start retweeting and, you know, sharing opportunities, whether it be jobs or playlisting opportunities or people looking for music where you can just drop a link really quickly. And we just try to share as many positive things and really show support for others. And then I try to get on Twitter 4 times a day, usually for about 10 minutes, 15 minutes a piece, and just go through that and do that every time down the feed.
Cool.
And that's opened a lot of doors.
Cool. That sounds so simple when you say it like that.
Yeah. Everybody needs support. Like literally I built one of my best friends now is the artist relations director at Genius. And it was just 6 months of consistently supporting the efforts he was doing. He doesn't have the audience that Genius has, of course, but he's the guy at Genius behind the scenes. So I think focusing on the people behind these brands, behind the door, behind the curtain, and just really supporting everything that they're trying to do. Also, Nate, I haven't got the chance to mention this to you yet, but you should definitely look into Moment House, ticketed live streaming events. I built a cool relationship with their CMO, and I would be happy to make an introduction if you ever needed that.
Yeah, we've got a connect already there, and we've done a couple things on their platform. Cool. It's been pretty good so far. We just haven't done much in the way of streaming ticketed shows since quote unquote real shows came back, and yeah, that's just unquote. So appreciate that though.
Yeah, cool. All right, Maggie raised your hand, so I would love to hear what is working for you, Maggie.
Sure. This is going to be a bit of a pivot in terms of topic on that front, but
no problem.
I've been doing more pay what you can shows and with a recommended amount, which means that I'm getting more people who wouldn't otherwise be able to afford to interact with either my workshops or my shows are able to come, and they're incredibly appreciative. And then it sort of facilitates this community that is a very word of mouth based community. And sometimes people don't have money to give, but they have other things to give and to share. And when people are appreciative, it just sort of expands. It's exponential. Sure. And then I've also found that people who can afford to give appreciate that it's a pay what you can model, and they tend to give way more. And I'm actually making more money now since I've switched to a pay what you can model than I did when it was like when I had just a set fee.
That's so interesting.
And like I said, it just seems to be, it's very community based. I mean, I suppose you can imagine, but that creating that it's about the community, it's about the music. It doesn't take money out of the equation. It's very much a part of the equation. Yeah, it just makes things accessible and more community based, I suppose. And it's part of that cohesion with my values. And I'm more selective about the communities that I'm engaging with, because I don't want to engage with people that aren't going to respect that. Sure. You know, that I'm giving you this opportunity, but you have to value what I'm offering. And it all works out. And so I'm actually looking at expanding that into my lessons, into other things this year, other parts of my business, which again is going to require me to be even more selective about who I work with. And I'm making more money. So
yeah, there's an economic theory that if you ask people to pay what they can, Taylor Swift used this on her last arena tour before COVID. It was early. It was like 18. But some of those tickets were going for like $650, where other ones were going for $85. And it was all across the board. But you kind of went into the ticket buying process with like, what are you willing to spend? And then they showed you the tickets that were in that zone. And that economic model basically eliminates scalpers, because nobody can make any money. So that is a technique that I really support as far as ways to reach the fans that want to support you and want to help you, but can't necessarily, you know, if there's two or three or four people that want to go and you priced your show at $40, all of a sudden, by the end of it, it's like a $200 night, you know? And maybe that's out of their budget right now. So I definitely really support that. Please keep us posted on how it goes in other areas too.
Yeah. Mark just asked if I do that with merch too. And I said, I do, but then I also don't have merch in advance. I have representations of merch and then I order it and send it out.
Interesting. So do you have like a limit on that, for like a cost limit? You know, like if this sweatshirt costs me $15, then I can't take five for it.
Well, my recommended, it's always pay what you can with a recommended amount. And the recommended amount, so people know what it would cost, right?
Sure,
yeah. And so I actually haven't yet run into a situation where I made less. Hmm. So I haven't really had to feel that, but I've sort of told myself that if that happens, I will just cover the difference for that, you know. Hopefully it's not in a big way, but it hasn't happened yet. So
amazing.
Can I ask a question?
Maybe? Yeah.
Did you do any research prior to that, talking to other artists who have done that? Is it the first one I recall ever doing that was Amanda Palmer, and it was probably 15 to 20 years ago. And she reported that she made several times more on the pay what you can model, or pay what you choose, than she did on a fixed price ticket model.
Yeah. No, I actually, my research was more in accessibility for educational programming. And then I just decided to try it with my professional stuff, with my other stuff.
It definitely works for educational programming. That I have studied that too. I did that with a workshop a couple years ago too. Mm-hmm. Charlie was in it. Amazing. Who has more questions or things that have helped in
the- I got one.
Yeah, give it to me, Isaac.
Did you say Isaac?
Oh, sorry. Is that who went? Is that not who just talked?
Yeah, that was me. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Go.
I'm in this weird space. Like I said, I don't want to like make it sound like something it isn't. Can you hear me, by the way?
Yes.
Okay. So first and foremost, like
I came out here to the east side of the state with nothing, no family, and just like hustling, you know, I started my own tile company and all this. And then I started hustling gigs and I was like, wow, I'm making like a lot of money and I pay taxes and all that. And I pushed my AGI up to 78,000. That's my AGI in 1 year.
That's impressive. From
performing. And that's great. That's great. Right. But I think that we deserve more. Mm-hmm. I think there's just such a, I don't want musicians to keep pigeonholing us into thinking our art is only to be valued at what it is. Like, and I'm just going to come out and say it. Like, I totally understand the whole pay what you're able to, but those same people, most of them are still going out and spending $150 on a ticket to see Hall & Oates. And it's like, where do we fit in the mix? And my mind has just like been blown by you, Maggie, right now, because I'm like, man, that's so smart in so many ways, but it goes against so many of my morals for so many reasons, but I don't have it all right. And I got to say from experience, I threw an event with my production company called Soul Cure Productions, and we did that. It was a suggested minimum donation, and but pay what you can. And we made a lot of money, and all my musicians got paid and everybody got paid. And I was like, there's some value in that. So I really appreciate you like bridging that jaded gap in my mind. Stephanie, do you want to say something?
Well, I do, but I can wait. Basically what I wanted to say was we tend to undervalue ourselves. And like you said, there are a lot of people that'll pay $150 per person, you know, to see Hall & Oates. Like now, I would pay $300 to see Prince because I didn't get to do it, you know?
Right.
And so when you have that amazing show, that amazing live show, and you have that scarcity element, then if you tell people this is the recommended amount, but please value it in a way that makes sense to you.
Right.
Then that allows them to bring their own morals and their own experience into the profit equation. You know what I mean?
Right. Absolutely. And to add on that, like, again, going into this organic thing, because I know that I can almost bet that everybody here has that experience of somebody yelling Freebird. And it's just like, those people don't give a shit. Excuse my French. They don't care about you. You're just there in the background playing your gigs. And sure, you might get us, my record's on vinyl and on CD, and I'll go and do a whole night of covers and I'll sell $250 worth of vinyl, CDs, and t-shirts when those people haven't even heard my original music. And that's great. And sometimes they just do it and it's like an easy 10 bucks, but a lot of those people don't really care. And like Maggie, what you said, you're bringing in a very, very valuable, you know, personable, organic connection between people who are just going to be there to support you throughout everything. Whereas I'm sitting here like, you know, I can capitalize on making money as a performing musician. I've got kids to feed. I'm a single dad, you know. So I've got that like, okay, well, this is happening and this doesn't take that much effort and work. And yeah, my time is eaten up a lot. I mean, I really don't have much free time between being a wedding musician, MC, you know, all of this, working on gear, kids. But I appreciate you giving me a little bit of like some insight, because I think I've just been a little exhausted with some of these venues trying to cut budgets when they're like expanding by 50 to 75% with outdoor dining. And all of these other musicians playing for like 50 to 75 bucks in this weird world where I'm trying to encourage people, you know, don't take, you know, just because the industry standard is $150 a gig, it should be $250 a gig. And it really should be. So, but I appreciate you like bridging that gap a little bit. And I want to know more of how that works, because I do throw events and they're always successful. And because of it being more of an organic reach, I'm not a commercially zoned place. We're doing, because we can't charge ticket sales. So we just like say, suggested minimum donation of $10 or $20. And then we also have a bar and the same thing, suggested donation. And people were coming in with like, oh, here's $100, man. Pay, you know what I mean? Like just, and I would be that guy too. So it's really good to know, because I know if I came to your show, Maggie, I think it's Maggie, and it was like, pay what you want, I'd be like, well, I'm going to pay what I would want as an artist. So here's $20-$30 for your show. And that's beautiful. And I really, it bridges a gap with me being such a like thick skinned, like I got like scar tissue over my soul, because I gig like 3 to 5 nights a week. I'm out here gigging, hustling, loading gear, getting disrespected, getting yelled at, Freebird and all this. And, you know, so I appreciate that insight a little bit, because I've been working this for a long time. I've only been a musician for the past 9 years. That's all I've done. And I've been very successful at capitalizing and pushing between 70 to 80,000 a year, with the exception of like COVID and the shutdowns, and, sure, you know, a couple months at a time. But so I appreciate that. But I wanted to say to the Ohio girl really quick too.
Abigail. Yeah.
Abigail, I'm from Southwest Michigan, and there's a big line drawn between from like Lansing to like, you know, Grand Rapids and Lansing to like Detroit. Like I was not connected at all, other than a little bit of Ann Arbor. I was not connected to the Detroit music scene at all. And when I came to Flint, Michigan and started getting connected, all I heard was people say, oh, you can't get into that. You can't, you're not going to be able to get into that. Oh, that's only these people get into that. And all that made me do was go get it. And now those same people are begging me for gigs, begging me for connections. They get butt hurt because I'm in venues that they told me that I could never be in. And now they're asking me for gigs. Don't listen to that clicky stuff. Like there's still things in Detroit that I haven't been a part of that are super awesome. And I'm friends with certain, and I'm slowly getting into them, but I haven't needed to. I've just like found my own market, my own way to do it. Just kind of like a lone wolf out here. But that whole clicky thing, like don't listen to it. You need to do everything in your power to get what people tell you you can't get and what you think you are not capable of getting. You are so much more capable. And it could be as simple as calling a venue when the owner or manager will be there at 10 o'clock in the morning on Monday and being like, hey, what's up, man? You don't have to like come up with some like little swindly way. Just act like I'm acting right now. Just be like, hey, what's going on, man? Like I'm out here gigging. This is what I do. Let me send you a couple of YouTube promos. Just get like a cheap software thing. Cut up a couple covers, put some text in there and be like, this is what I'm doing, man. Let me come in. You know, this is what I want. And I definitely want a free meal and some drinks too. And just get the gig. I mean, it's not, you're so much more capable. Don't come in hesitant and think that you're not capable. Learn the songs, learn how to play off of the crowd, no matter what it is. Extend your category. I mean, it's easier said than done. Like not a lot of musicians can do what I do. I learn so much music and I retain it. And some people, it might take an extra couple hours, but I mean, I can listen to a song, pick up guitar and play it as long as I have the lyrics. But Abigail, don't sell yourself short. Yeah. Don't worry about the clicky crowds. You are just sliding through the curtains elegantly and get your badass song list and get those freaking gigs. You are so much more capable than you're making yourself out to be.
Yes.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
You all are. Yes, absolutely. Everything he says is accurate. You are so much more capable than you all think you are. And I think one of the things personally for me, one of the effects of this COVID isolation has been a decreased understanding of my own effect on people and my value. And that leads me to be alone with my thoughts. And sometimes my thoughts are, nobody cares. Nobody needs me. I'm not helping anybody, you know? And if you feel that way, it can be really hard then to get up and try to do it again. And you go on Instagram Live and you're like, I'm going to put myself out there. And then, you know, 4 minutes into it, you have one viewer and it's your cousin. And then you're like, oh, nobody cares. And so keep Isaac's voice in the back of your head
that you are much more capable than your thoughts are telling you. And you are needed. Your music is needed. There are people that are waiting for you to release more music. And they're not telling you that. They don't want to bug you, you know? Hey, man, when are you going to release that music? But they do. They want it, you know? So keep your head up. Don't get discouraged. And yeah, thank you so much, Isaac. Does anybody else have any stories about things that have been working really well for them over the last, you know, 6 months to a year or so?
Yeah.
Anything else that you want to share?
I do, if it's okay.
Okay, yeah, let's do Abigail and then Nate.
So I've taken this approach where as a single mom, I find a lot of value in getting something on sale, I guess is the correct term. Yeah. So I've started pitching things when I'm approaching a venue as, you know, as an example, you know, normally for the PA lights, a three-hour show, it would be, you know, say $700. But since I've not worked with you before, you know, I would do the show for you for $500. And that seems to, I don't know if it's going to work for anyone else here, but $500 is a tidy sum, I think, for what I'm doing. And I find a lot of venues tend to, if they feel like they're getting something really good for a little bit less, I'm not giving up anything on my end because I probably would have done it for $300 just to make money. Because I also have two kids to feed. I'm a single mom. But I don't, there just seems to be, I get a lot of takers when I say, normally it's this list price, but I will come in and do it for this amount. So I don't know if that's what you were looking for, but oh, yeah. I've had a lot of success with that so far.
Yeah. Yeah. That one of the things that I want to talk about as we get deeper into this week is how to express that value that you would be worth $700 in the first place, you know, because I think that is the tent pole of that strategy working is that in the first place, the talent buyer has to believe that you are worth $700 in the first place, right? And that part of it, I think, can make people feel confused and discouraged sometimes if they don't feel in their hearts that they are worth $700 in the first place. So that's something that I would love to talk to you more about as we get, you know, a little bit deeper into this. Is like, what is it? What are the things that as musicians we can do to tell talent buyers, tell venue owners that, you know, I'm worth $700 and here's the reasons why. Here's how many people, tickets, beer, you know, all the different, I tend to be a numbers person. So I'm sitting there like, the expenses are going to be this and 60% and, you know, but that's not how a lot of people think about it when they're going into it. So you brought up some amazing topics that I really want to dive into. I wish we had unlimited time today. We just get right into it, but we'll have to come back to it. So thank you so much for everything you just said. That was awesome. I want to see Nate. I want to hear what Nate has to say next. Yeah. Beautiful.
Hi. So when New York shut down, all the gigs went away. And not only did all the gigs went away, a lot of the musicians went away too. There was a huge turnover in this city. It was remarkable to see all of the people that I work with and usually collaborate with just scatter, you know, all across the country. Everyone went everywhere. And so it really kind of felt like a reset button in a lot of ways of, and that it's like, okay, great. Got to go out and gotta start over basically. Find new bandmates, find new people, find new projects. And you didn't even know when that was going to start again because of how everything was opening and then closing and then opening, and closing again. The thing that worked really well for me was teaching. during the lockdowns. And I remember one of my professors in college telling me that if you're going to be a musician and decide to study music and be a musician, you are signing up to be a teacher one way or another, whether it's you're teaching kids or adults. But you, if you have a band, you have to teach people the songs you write. You have to be a teacher in some capacity. And so the instruction part for me, and then trying to figure out how to do it all remotely, which is a challenge within itself, was it ended up really working for me in terms of stabilizing, you know, the what really was just a vanish of all of the income that you would get from normal gigs or recording dates and sessions and things like that. So
did you teach before lockdown at all?
I did teach before lockdown. It was what I did during the day. I had I actually was running around teaching a bunch of at different places and then doing a lot of gigs during the day / night. And I was really running myself rampant and driving myself into the ground, hustling. Mm-hmm. But when we locked down, I just get to show up to my computer. It was a lot less effort, but I didn't change my rate. And everybody, because your time is valuable. And I think that might actually kind of go to maybe talking about, is a good segue into how much we're worth performing. Because if you're dedicating your time to a student, and you're charging, say, you know, anywhere from, you know, $80 to $100 an hour for one person, that's okay. Multiply that by, okay, if you have a 2-hour gig plus the time it takes to travel there and things, that starts getting closer to that $700 mark that you were talking about, to that talent buyer. So that's something to keep in mind for, you know, the bracket where you fall under in terms of what you're worth. Because
Oh, no, that's super helpful. There's another economic theory that I like to teach, the opportunity cost of, if I'm not doing your thing, what else can I be doing and how much money can I be making there? And I'm a tax preparer. I can go anywhere and make $125 an hour. I could bill $125 an hour. That's not what I actually, you know, take home after the software and everything. And so when I'm teaching somebody, I can't come into it and be like, hey, yeah, so our lesson is going to be $125 for an hour, because that scares them. You know, I have to present it as value, but it's always in the back of my mind and my husband's mind, like, hey, Steph, you could go get a job and make a lot of money, you know? And I'm like, well, I can, but I want to do this instead. So let me raise my rates, raise my value, teach the way that I want to teach, and still express, you know, that value in a way that makes sense for everybody. So yeah, love that point. Awesome point. Thank you for bringing that up. Maggie. Thanks, Isaac.
I'd like to sort of make a bridge between something that Nate said and something that Abigail said, particularly about teaching. So there's, as a teacher, and as Nate said, if we're working in music, we're all teachers, right? Yeah. So anybody who's tried to teach something knows that you have to have multiple entry points, because you don't know that what the person that you're trying to teach something to, what their background is, where they're coming from. So same thing with pitching a show to somebody. You want to have the numbers, right? This is what it's going to cost, and this is why. So multiple entry points can include for Abigail's, you know, pitching, for example, quotes from people, like people who've attended your shows, what they say about your show. So I find for some people, they really respond to that. For other people, they really respond to the numbers. But you want to have all these things in your pitch, I find, and be able to speak to them. And then whatever they respond to, you then need to be able to elaborate on, and then then help them bridge the gap between their zone of proximal development. That makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. what you just said is actually curriculum wise what this works this first day is. I'm meeting you all where you are, but first I had to know where you are. So that's why you're all telling me stories instead of me teaching anything. So case in point. Yeah, super important. Have you found, Maggie, that it's easy to figure out which talent buyers respond to which pitch methods, or is it trial and error? Like, how do you know?
I don't know. Some people might find it easy. For me, it's trial and error. And like I said earlier, the thing that I've really, that really keeps coming back to me is that it's not worth pitching to people who don't respond to who you are and your values. Mm-hmm. It's not worth trying to force them to appreciate you. Find the people in the communities that do appreciate you.
100%. Oh my gosh. If you don't take anything else away from this meeting, take that. That is such an important lesson. And I feel like the pandemic made that easier, hopefully, as we go forward, because I feel like the cream is rising to the top. You know, if we were all a bunch of milk, we all got shaken up real bad. And then we all sat real still. Right. And then that cream is like, do, 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 do. So if you haven't yet, hi, Kitty. If you haven't yet, now's the time to skim the cream, you know, and like, that's one of the things that I want to do in the next 4 days of this workshop is I want us all individually, because we're all in such different places. I want us all to skim the cream and figure out what we want next. You know, what big venues, what big producers, what kind of songwriters do we want to work with? How can we, now that we've been settled for so long, and this is going to end. It feels like it will never end, but it will end. Hopefully, God willing, this is the last winter of our malcontent, you know? And summer's gonna look different than the last, any other summer we've ever had before. It's just inevitable. So we can start planning now for what kinds of projects we want to launch into in the spring, what kind of gigs we want to play in the summer, who we want to work with, where we want to go. And so just to kind of recap, what I heard a lot of people saying about what was working is, in summary, meeting people where they are, meeting talent buyers where they are, meeting venue owners, meeting your students, not necessarily decreasing your rates or decreasing the amount that you output, but understanding that everybody is in a different place. So does anybody else have anything that they want to add that's been really working for them lately?
I have a question, actually. Yeah. Just in response to what you just said. Yeah. So like I said, I'm a freelance video editor, content creator, so that has been working with me with generating more income, though it's not like super, super consistent, but it's been consistent enough where I'm able to do that while still looking for, you know, regular work outside of the entertainment industry. But my question was, seeing as though I've graduated with my music business degree, music industry studies degree, just trying to find my place where I fit in with that degree. So like, basically trying to find work and trying to find a way where I can put my degree to use. So I know there's a lot of different avenues and a lot of different ways and a lot of different things that you can get into with, you know, having that background, but I don't know specifically where I would fit in or like what I could do to like, you know, get my feet into the door and, you know, going down a different path, because I haven't really looked into like management work or working at a recording label or anything like that, but I am musically inclined. Like, I'm classically trained. I sing, I act, and I do like a lot of different things in the entertainment industry, but it's kind of difficult finding where my place would be in, you know, the music business side and how I would actually go about putting myself forward and venturing off and making that a source of income for myself as well. So if anybody have any tips or advice or something that will help, that would be greatly appreciated or even useful.
Yeah. Yeah. I do. If you don't mind.
Sure.
In all of my years of experience, I tried so many different things. I worked for a tech company as a marketing director. I worked at a venue as a production manager. I was a waitress. I was a bartender. I worked for a management company. I interned at an agency. And the only way that I knew I didn't want to do any of that stuff was by doing it.
Yeah.
And that part of it is very, very hard in this current climate, because it's not like you can just walk into the local radio station and say, hey, do you have any spots?
Good job. Available? Right.
Yeah. So I know you, and I have my own biases on what I think you particularly are good at. So maybe we could talk a little bit offline about how you have a very specific natural skill set exemplified mostly on your YouTube channel that I believe that musicians would really gravitate toward if you were to promote it.
Okay.
So Deja's like a really great stylist, I would say, in summary.
Yeah.
I don't really know any other word besides that, but I feel like a Deja makes people look beautiful on camera. And that is something that is a huge confidence boost for people who don't know how to look good on camera.
Mm-hmm.
And so I am answering your question with my own personal biases about what I think you are good at.
Mm-hmm.
For a broader kind of answer to your, you know, original question, you really just have to go do it in order to find out what you like and what you don't like. I never thought I would be doing taxes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, oh my God, like never in a gazillion years. And the only reason that I knew that I liked it was because I desperately needed a job and they were willing to pay me $13 an hour to answer the phones. And then tax returns started coming in and I was like, oh, these are interesting. And people started calling me with these problems and I would say, hey guys, what's the answer? And they would tell me and it felt good to give the answer. And then I wanted to know the answer.
Right.
If I hadn't done that, I definitely would not be where I am today. So take any opportunity that feels good in your gut.
Mm-hmm.
And we can talk more offline about kind of style stuff. Cause you're good at that. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
I actually can kind of like identify with that a lot. Kind of being in a place where you want to do so much and everything seems cool. And there's like a million different like niches in the industry and you're like, well, I want to do this and this and this, and you have to pick. And for a long time, I put a lot of pressure on myself to pick. And I was like, I don't know what I want to do. And I kind of have been trying to tell myself, like, you can do all of it. You can just try new stuff. And like something that I would always feel like a little discouraged with, especially this past couple years where not as much is happening because of the pandemic and everything, is like, it is really hard to get out there and go create opportunities for yourself. Like, it is hard to find opportunities, especially I think in Detroit, especially because of the size of the industry and because of the pandemic, especially like there's not just a bunch of different opportunities for you to like go try. And it was uncomfortable at first. And I spent a lot of time like just like trying to rack my brain and figure out how I could get opportunities to do things. And somewhere, I honestly can't put my finger on exactly how, but like somewhere along the line, I just started like doing things that end up leading me, like the tiniest little domino effect would lead me to this. So like, I would do a lot of Instagram stalking. Like I would like go on Instagram and see what shows were being played where, and like, okay, like these group of people play shows at this venue. Okay, let me follow this venue and let me see what they do. And like, I would just follow these little rabbit holes on Instagram or like social media and like follow people, reach out to them, reply to their stories, like reply to things. And that's like over time kind of created some opportunities, which was really great. Like one of my really good friends who is, I work with them frequently and they've paid me like money to work for them. I reached out over Instagram. I listened, they did a podcast and they made a joke about wanting an intern and I DM'd them and I was like, hey, like, I know you're kidding, but like, I could be your intern if you want. And like, then I interned for them and now I work with them. So it's kind of like really vulnerable. And that was hard for me at first, but like the more I just put myself out there and like kind of made friends, like genuine connections and like kind of supported people and like supported their projects and went to, I mean, going to things is hard now, but like, you know, as much of those little connections as you can make, I think that really helped me personally, like get experience trying 7 or 8 different like niches and roles and saying, oh yeah, I hate doing this, but I love doing this. What can I like? And then like you refine it every time. If that makes any sense. I don't know if that's
no, it totally makes sense. And I understand because like with music business, you know, you're a music business student as well. There's a lot of different avenues that you can take it as far as being an A&R, being a manager. I don't want to be a manager, but being an A&R, being a manager, getting into journalism, getting into mass media. And I looked at those two things, but it's kind of like, where would I actually start and how would I actually get my foot in the door?
For sure.
The space is so closed in now, especially since the pandemic, people aren't really looking for like, who are you? What can you give me? How would you be valuable to this company if we already have a lineup of people who we can rely on and go to who we already trust? So that's the kind of space I'm in. And like with being in Detroit, it's not really, like you said, it's not really that many opportunities that you frequently come across. So it's kind of like a needle in a haystack almost.
Yeah, for sure. Well, with like journalism, I know that's maybe one specific thing you mentioned. Like I ended up writing an article and then I just sent it out to a bunch of different places and I just said, hey, I wrote this, if you think it's cool, do you want to publish it? And I don't think they're active anymore, but Resurgent Magazine, Detroit based, picked it up and published it, and now I get to put that on my website as like a portfolio piece of published writing. So it's kind of just like doing things and then like asking everybody or like, yeah. And I know that's super hard. And I know that's like, because I would get that kind of advice and be like, well, how do I do it though? You know, but I think it's kind of just like observing and then like doing and just putting yourself out there. I don't know. But if you ever like reach out to me anytime, if you, you know,
no, I got think, you, and
I'd love to like share connections.
I think I follow you on Instagram or it's either in the Facebook. I'm not sure, one of those, but I'll definitely reach out. You, because that'll be great help. And social media is also a good help as well, because it allows me to, you know, network with different people, not only local but in different states, and kind of build that connection as well. So thank you so much for that.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. So one thing that I want you to remember as we start this week, one of the things that I really want to tackle is making lists of people and venues that we want to work with, humans that we want to work with. Bye, Mark. Thank you. We're going to be closing up soon. So we'll see you tomorrow if you can join us. So we're going to be making lists, and those lists are going to be real. They're going to be real people, real venues that you want to play, or real musicians that you would want to work with. They can be local. They don't have to be local. One of the nice things about the pandemic is that basically everything can be remote now. And if it's not, then there's a very specific reason why, like they need you in the office for some reason, that's fine. We don't need to worry about that right now. But Deja, to answer your question, there are humans doing all of the jobs that you could ever possibly want. And those humans have stories and relationships, and there's no reason why you can't be a part of their world. If they have 5 million followers or billions of streams, it might be a little bit harder to break into, of course, because they have bigger circles, deeper layers. But if you love an artist that has 30,000 monthly followers, they very well might respond to your Instagram message, write you back on Twitter, and they might need an intern. They might need a social media content creator. They might really need a video editor. A lot of people really need video editors. And you might have to work for free for the first project. You know, say, let me put together a teaser. Oh, you have a new single coming out and you have all these raw video clips that you think don't look good together. But I know if I put a filter on this one and reverse this one, you know, you do, I know how your brain works. And so, you know, all those things that you can do and they don't. All they know is they have to zip up their MP4s and Dropbox them to you. And then 3 days later, they're going to have a 60-second Instagram clip that shows off their new single. You do that one time for free, and then you can charge $250 each, because that value, that time saved, that peace of mind, that feeling of pride where you're like, ooh, look at this cool piece of content that somebody just made for me. I just outsourced this project. Aren't I hot shit? You know? And so we'll get a little bit deeper into what you really want your life to look like tomorrow and the rest of the week. And that's exactly the kind of leveling up that we're going to do. Because awesome. Right now you are at this level and you know that you can be at this level, but how do we get there? We're going to help each other up, right? You guys are amazing. We're going to be here every day this week, 2 o'clock, same Zoom link. I'm going to send reminders. I'm sorry if that's annoying. I'm going to, you know, convert this and post it to the Facebook group, When Songs Mean Business. Feel free to join. I'm going to drop this chat in there as well, so everybody can connect in there. We can connect on Instagram, whatever platform you use. I'm so excited for what the next 4 days are going to hold as we start to build our businesses and share advice with each other and move our music up a level or two with the help of each other. Does everybody have their helping hands on? Yes, helping hands. All right, beautiful.
Let's people. Do it.
Let's do it. All right. Thank you all so much for coming.
Thank you so much, Steph.
Thank you.
Steph, yeah, nice meeting you.
You're beautiful and I love you.
You too.
We'll talk Thank to you.
Soon. Okay. When Songs Mean Business is a production of Steph Belcher Business Management, LLC. This episode was hosted, edited, and produced by me, Steph Belcher. Please make sure to join us in our Facebook group, When Songs Mean Business, and follow us on Instagram at When Songs Mean Business. As always, thank you to The Dropout for the break music. Thank you so much for listening, and have a wonderful day.